We're going to open our rules, interim House Committee on Rules meeting today, and I appreciate the people that are here and the people who are going to give us some information. Today we're going to have some informational meetings, and before we get started on our first one, I just want to explain that about a month and a half ago, or 2 months, I started doing some checking into things like redistricting, and came upon the interesting information from a number of people who were working on this last 10 years ago, that getting people up to speed so they know what's available and the kind of software that's out there and the kinds of issues that come up during redistricting was really important, and that we really hadn't done much of that. And so there was a meeting that was happening in Chicago, which everybody that I talked to indicated was an important meeting to get people to because it had a lot of information. So I talked with the Senate and the House and said, we need to look at our ban on travel, and we need to get some people there who can be that nonpartisan group that comes and helps all of us when we have a question, that is our staff, our professional staff here, and that they need to be at these meetings and start really coming up to speed if they weren't already. We do have some people who are pretty dedicated to it, and I appreciated that. And people agreed that we really needed to get a couple people, so we have both of them here. And you can come on up if you want or not, either way. You can stay there, that's fine.
We won't bite.
But we did get approval for a couple people to go, and I wanted to make sure that we got an input back to us about the kinds of stuff they found out about that. I personally would love to have this next session be the time when we actually get some redistricting done in the building, and we work together to find that solution, which we haven't done since the 80s. That would be exciting to me. And so, given that, I asked if the people who, at least Aaron, who went and found out, and Aaron's been studying this for a while, the kinds of information that's out there now, so that we have start having an idea of the kinds of questions we might want to ask them to look into for us, the kinds of software we may really want to think about getting and having at our disposal, those kinds of things, which I think are really important if we're really going to do this the way I think it should be done. So with that, our first one is on redistricting and the National Conference. And Aaron, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I'm Aaron Seiler from Committee Services. I did have the opportunity to go to Chicago and attend the NCSL National Redistricting Conference. This first information is just an overview of what the conference was, including some of the participants who were there, some of the presenters and presentation types that we received. We had quite a diverse array of presenters and from a variety of organizations. And in types of presentations, we had a variety of demonstrations, work groups. We got our own simulation. We had an overview of the census. We had a veterans roundtable, in addition to workshops about how to set up an operation, how to choose software, and where to begin. The three key lessons that I took away from redistricting is that there is no one way to prepare or complete redistricting. Each state conducts legislative and congressional redistricting differently. Each state will have different operational and staffing and technical needs based upon the size and scope of their redistricting process. States have different statutory requirements and timelines for completing redistricting. That being said, there are questions, experiences, and choices that are shared amongst the states. Questions about how to set up a redistricting operation, what information do you need to consider, who is responsible for redistricting, experiences with establishing budgetary timelines, creating effective websites and public outreach, choices about levels of staffing, what software and data should be utilized. And then the third point is, path towards redistricting is paved with lessons of the past. The infrequency and lack of statutory consistency and the rapidity with which redistricting must occur within states creates a steep learning curve amongst staff, particularly those like myself who have not participated in redistricting before. One of the best resources for overcoming this curve is to learn from those who participated in redistricting. They're the institutional knowledge of redistricting, so to speak. NCSL facilitates these discussions by bringing together experienced participants with those who have never been involved in redistricting and offering practical advice, recommendations, and suggestions about how to best approach the process, recommended tools and resources to consider using in your state, and where to begin. It was recommended that a state begin with the basics. Knowing the basics about redistricting will lay the groundwork for determining how to approach redistricting and how to set up a redistricting operation. So what is redistricting? Redistricting is the process of redrawing legislative and congressional district boundaries to equalize populations in a state. Who is responsible for redistricting? In Oregon, the Oregon legislature is responsible for legislative and congressional redistricting. The Secretary of State does become responsible for legislative redistricting if the legislature's plan is not enacted by July 1, 2011, vetoed by the governor, or successfully challenged to the Oregon Supreme Court. When does redistricting occur? Redistricting begins upon receipt of the census data. States will receive the data no later than April 1st, 2011, and the legislature must complete their redistricting process by July 1, 2011. In your handout, I have also included a more detailed census timeline. You'll find a packet that's from the Brennan Center that has a little bit more detail about how the census works and the completing of it. Oregon's redistricting timeline.
How short a time is? I mean, that's it. I was just going to say.
Go back one.
It's
April 1 data, mm-hmm. July 1 deadline.
Same year.
One year later.
No, same year.
3 months. The data, okay.
We have to get the actual data on about 4 months before we have to be done with
the
process.
I'm just remarking, Mr. Chair, that that is a very short timeline for anything to happen in the legislative venue. Thank you.
That's why we haven't been real successful
with
this.
Imagine doing it when the data came on index cards.
Well, I'm just commenting that my jaw dropped when I looked at that timeline. Yeah.
Is a very fast 3 month timeline. The prescription for doing timeline is in Article 4, Section 6 of the Oregon Constitution. For legislative districts, if the legislature fails to enact a plan by July 1, 2011, the responsibility does fall to the Secretary of State, who then has until August 15th of 2011 to complete the plan and submit it to the Supreme Court. Now, for congressional districts, there is no constitutional statutory timelines or deadlines. Practically speaking, the deadline is in time for the candidates filing for the next primary election. This is the constitutional timeline as outlined in Article 4, Section 6. The left column represents the timeline if the legislature enacts a plan and the plan is challenged to the Supreme Court. The right column reflects if the timeline for if the legislature fails to enact a plan and the Secretary of State becomes responsible for the plan. Plans will take effect July 1, 2013. There is a separate handout in your packet of this, which is a little more, it's a little clearer than what is in the presentation. So how is redistricting done? Oregon has used a legislative model for redistricting, which means redistricting plans are drafted as legislative bills. They follow traditional legislative process, and they are subject to a governor's veto. During legislative redistricting, committee services provides the administrative support, much in the same way committee services provide support to committees and the legislative assembly during the redistricting process. There will be assistance with technical and administrative support, purchasing of software and hardware, support for public computers and workstations, and assisting with public access, and if decided, a public website. The statutory criteria followed by Oregon during redistricting, each district, as nearly as practical, shall be of equal population, contiguous, connected by transportation links, using existing geographic political boundaries, and not divide communities of interest. Districts may not be drawn to favor any political party or incumbent legislature or other person, and districts may not be drawn to dilute the voting strength of any language or ethnic minority group. And then Oregon also has a nesting requirement in which two state house districts are required to be nested in within one single Senate district. There are some additional non-statutory criteria that have been drawn from previous Oregon plans, court decisions, and have often utilized by other states, requirements about not splitting cities, not splitting counties. The tradition of district lines should move from areas that need population to areas with excessive population, political competitiveness, and compact and geographically uniform districts.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can you back up one slide? The last point here is a statutory requirement. It's not constitutional.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Understanding the basics of redistricting provides the framework and defines the scope of the task and helps establish the timeline for redistricting. It provides the context for assessing and answering questions regarding how to set up a redistricting operation, which is the next basic step in the redistricting process. Some of the questions that are recommended to be asked when setting up a redistricting operation are: what are the staff, technology, and space requirements? What is the timeline for staff and technology acquisition? What is your budget timeline, and what is your budget? How can the Legislative Assembly involve the public? And what additional information and resources could be useful in the process for redistricting? What are the staff, technology, and space requirements? Space is how many workstations are necessary for redistricting, how much office space or conference room space is available, should you consider finding office space outside of the legislative venue, private space, conference rooms, additional areas. Looking at staff, whom to hire. Staff and complexity of redistricting operations determines the type and number of staff that should be considered. Type of staff that is often hired to do redistricting are GIS analysts, interns, administrative support, legal counsel. And then what type of training is required for this staff? And then the final consideration is technology. What software and hardware is required? Some states do have full-time redistricting offices and have the capacity to build their own software. In Oregon, we've traditionally bought off-the-shelf software, and we will do so again this time. We are in the process of reviewing and identifying which software would be best. There are three major companies that we're looking at: Maptitude, Autobound, and ArcView. And then hardware purchases that should be considered are plotters for maps, printers, PCs, and basic office supplies. And determining when considering staff, technology, space, all needs to be considered within the context of what your budget is. And determining the timeline for hiring the staff and purchasing technology should align with your budget. Technology is a necessary part of redistricting and a substantial budgetary expense, and it's recommended that these decisions be resolved in concert with budget development because it will overall limit your ability to hire additional staff and access other resources. This is a draft timeline that lays out the timeline for staff, technology, and space requirements that I have drafted for committee services. It spans beginning next month and through 2010 of next year. It has to do with starting with software development and choices, decisions on software. We will be making an e-board request for budget and expense, recruitment of staff and training, and then potentially considering what public hearings, road hearings, and other public access will need to be required. And then another piece of setting up a redistricting operation is to consider how the public can participate. There are several options to think about: capital hearings, video conferences, road hearings, providing public computer workstations, having and maintaining a redistricting website with information that could include maps, find your legislature, links to members of committees, agendas, audio archives, links to outside resources such as the Census Bureau, the Portland State University Population Research Center, and the Secretary of State. Several of the recommended websites to look at would be, we did have one in Oregon in 2001, and then Kansas, Washington, Texas, Arizona, and Minnesota have very comprehensive websites and would be good sources to look at. And then what additional information and resources could be useful? Population estimates, and they will permit identification of statewide population distribution, population geography and migration trends, and changes in overall population of metropolitan and rural areas. Legislative history. In your packet, I've included a memo that includes the legislative history back to 1951 of how Oregon has accomplished redistricting. It will give you some idea about what has happened in the past. It'll help you learn from what worked well and what did not work well. If a plan was challenged in court and why, and how could it be done differently to prevent that? And then voter and election source data. Some states can use election data and must acquire this themselves at an expense because the Census Bureau does not collect election data. And then I have included a chart here. This is the 2008 population estimates provided by the Portland State Population Research Center. And it will just give you an idea of how we've grown since the last census based on 2008 estimates. And then it also shows some changes in counties, percent, and population since 2000. They will have additional data out. Official 2009 population estimates will be available on December 15th. And then to wrap up, in summary, redistricting is a state-by-state process with no right or wrong way to complete the task. But all states will begin with the basics, determining what their charge is, and will be deciding on what the most effective setup for their redistricting operation. And it's always important to look to the experience of the past to help guide the future. Just because of the 10-year gap between redistricting, the short time frame in which it occurs, and the frequency of turnover of staff, that they don't stay over 10 years. And
there we go.
Thank you very much, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
So are there any questions? Right. Okay. Representative Berger.
Yeah, thanks, Erin. Little flow chart here. It all starts with the software. Do you have a range of what a software package costs? And if I could, these are all related questions that I just wanted a discussion on. How much support do they give if you purchase it? Mm-hmm. And the reason that I'm asking is because the staff that you, I mean, the hardware seems to me pretty much the same across the board, but the staff that you get and is sort of driven by what you decide in the first place, because you're not going to hire an ArcView expert mm-hmm. if you've just dropped a bundle into Maptitude.
Correct. Representative Roblin, Vice Chair Berger, the price in software depends on how many licenses you purchase. The three that we've looked at, Maptitude, ArcView, Autobound, do offer bulk purchases for licenses. A Maptitude license, I will say, starts at $7,500 for the first 1 to 4 license. It goes down to $65 for purchases of 4 to 10, and after that it drops further. We are awaiting Autobound, who we're trying to schedule to come in the 1st of December, but at the conference I will say they quoted a price of $5,900 for the first license, and I believe it was for the first 1 to 10 licenses. In terms of support, both companies offer full support via online resources, telephone. I will say RIS department will know the software, but they will not be experts in the software. And the other piece of when doing a across-the-board comparison, Maptitude, ArcView, Autobound all do and read files the exact same way. A lot of the differences are user differences, and I don't mean to say superficial differences, but it's kind of the difference in Coke and Pepsi.
Erin. That was well put. And we all know Coke is superior, don't we?
There you go. Other questions for Erin? Anybody else with me?
I'm looking at page 19 at the county piece.
Yes.
Either my glasses aren't working very well or Douglas County is omitted.
I'm very sorry, Representative.
It's just not there.
Oh, my gosh.
I am.
Okay.
Hold
on.
Is that part of the redistricting process?
I know our unemployment rate is, you know, 18 plus, but we're still living there.
It's probably Portland State. They probably forgot to gather the information.
I forgot. There is Southern Oregon still there.
Exactly.
I will find that out for you.
Thanks.
Chair Rowland, members of the committee, I just wanted to make a quick clarification from Representative Nolan's question. That's actually the nesting requirement is actually a constitutional requirement as well.
And Jenny, we appreciate you going as well to find out, you know, what you should know, what you don't need to take time on. And I guess the same thing I would say with Aaron. Did you find out legitimately that every state is really different? So you're on this through your own state stuff more than you're on it through, from the legal perspective, more than it is from the federal? Or was there some similarities between states with respect to the legal ramifications?
Representative Rowland, members of the committee, I think that's true. I think, you know, we have, every state is very unique in this process. I think one thing I took away from the conference was understanding the federal requirements better and knowing what matters for Oregon and what, you know, Oregon probably won't run into unlike, you know, some other states, so.
Representative Berger, okay.
We can go first.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious if you've had any conversations with the PSU Population Center about providing some timely population estimates when the census data are released.
Yes, Representative Rowland, Representative Edwards, we have had conversations with Charles Reinerson and Sheila Martin at the Population Center to not only provide it when 2010 census data, but to provide estimates and county data in 2009 and then leading into 2010, because they will get it shortly after it's released to the President at the end of 2010.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Sure. Yes,
thank you,
please.
And the approximate length of those estimates? I mean, assuming that, you know, it's a 10-year census process, are they going to be able to project with fair confidence for at least half of that period so that we can arrange districts to ensure that we're not taking just into account the immediate census figures, but also the projected populations over a significant period of the...
Representative Rowland, Representative Earth, I cannot tell you how they can predict and what length they can predict. I do know they do yearly estimates, and so that does provide some long-term prediction, but I do not know if they can use those 2010 estimates to predict more 5 or 10 years out.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Berger.
Yeah, I noticed that this was the second of five.
Mm-hmm.
Did you miss something in the first, and what would be the value of 3, 4, and 5?
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Berger, each of these conferences is its own individual conference in that a lot of the material presented to Chicago was from the similar to the materials presented in San Francisco, and then the materials presented at the next one, which is Dallas, will be very similar with tweaks based on feedback they received from.
Okay.
So they're each their own with a lot of the same information.
Further questions? I guess I'll ask a couple because I agree with that, and I checked with NCSL, and that's why I got excited about going to the Chicago one, because I look at your timeline, and it looks pretty tight. I mean, you have... a lot to do in a very short period of time in a budget session that's in pretty tough shape anyway. So we have eBoard here coming up in January. You're going to go visit? I mean, I just want to make sure that when you're doing your software and that kind of stuff, when are we looking at software purchases?
We are, Chair Roblin, we are looking at deciding on software the 1st of January. eBoard, I believe, will be either April.
Okay.
I believe is in April. So we will hopefully have decided what our software will be and have a budget package laid out for them.
Okay. And we have at least a little bit of invention. The executive branch, one of the people who worked for us and did this last time, is still available to talk to.
Yes.
But we don't have a lot of expertise left over in the building. So are you feeling supported enough to get us ready for where we need to go, Aaron? I guess it's a big one. Okay.
Chair Roblin, I will say I've had the opportunity to visit with about 90% of the participants in redistricting in 2001, both the legislative staff, Marjorie Taylor, Steve Barnett, participants from both caucuses, Gary Wilhelm, Jeff Stemsey. So I have really reached for that institutional knowledge to help us guide this process this time and hit the ground running, because we do have a very short timeline and a lot of decisions to make.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. I want to thank you, Aaron. That was a great presentation. So thanks. I know that it's always difficult to put you guys out there in this place, yeah, but we really appreciate it. And I think I started getting a lot of anxiety over this about 2.5 months ago. Probably should have done that sooner than that. But and as I've looked at it and started talking to NCSL people, they recommended this is the best one to go to of the four and some other stuff. What you've done is given me a little bit more, take a deep breath and recognize that we can collectively get to where we need to go in the next 12 to 18 months, which is what we need to really be ready on. So thank you very much. And
thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to speak with any of you or any, if you want any additional information, please just let our office know. We are available as your resource. So thank you very much.
Thank you. So next, we have with us Ron Burson, Executive Director. We have the Oregon Government Ethics Commission, and they have a rulemaking update. They're doing the rulemaking process with regard to the ethics reforms that we did this last session, and we had the original draft come out October. Is that about when we had the first draft?
Yeah.
September, October. And I looked at that one, it made me a little nervous, and so I thought about this particular thing. We had another draft just come out the last week or so, and I really haven't a chance to go through the whole thing, but I'm starting to feel a little better. And I know that you have meetings this week, actually, that possibly looking at some of this, and I just thought it would be a timely time for us to ask some questions and see how that process is going and where we think we're moving towards. And so with that, I'll let you give a short explanation and I'll have some questions. So thank you for being here, Ron.
Thank you for having me, Chair Roblin. Well, as you know, the administrative rules process is an easy process that every agency looks forward to, and this one was particularly easy. I appreciate that the legislative administrative interest had decision or vote, so at least I know what vote is. But we spent quite a bit of time, and to tell you a little bit about the process, is unfortunately we weren't able to meet with the advisory committee before the public hearing that we had just because of scheduling purposes, mainly my fault on that, just my availability. But we have had a couple of meetings with
Ron, be sure and introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Ron Burson. I'm the executive director for the Ethics Commission. Anyway, we've had a couple of meetings with the advisory committee, and we were able to take our original draft and try to get it to a point that I think everybody is at least more comfortable with it. I mean, you can understand this is a really difficult rule to write around decision because, you know, what portion of decision do you want to capture? And remember, this relates to the gift limits. I mean, obviously, everybody in their professional life makes decisions. And I don't believe that the legislative intent was to grab every one of those decisions and make that a legislative or administrative interest. I think another thing that's important to point out is that a legislative administrative interest is an economic interest that's distinct from the general public. So when you look at the rule, you got to kind of put that in context with that economic interest that is inside of the statute. So all we're trying to define is decision here. And I left some copies of the new draft if you did not have them. But if you look at now what we've changed decision to mean an act that commits a public body to a particular course of action within the public official scope of authority. Decision is not a recommendation or work performed in an advisory committee capacity, and then we put some following examples. And I guess the best way for me to kind of sum this up is that you know, everybody has a scope of authority that they're either given through their elected position, through their appointed position, or through their employment. And inside of that scope of authority, if somebody from the outside has an economic interest in your authority, then you are restricted to up to $50 per year from gifts from that person and or entity out there. And so it's difficult for me to tell you, you know, to write a rule about everybody's scope of authority because there's thousands of scopes of authority out there. But this gives us a way of trying to train people because they know what their jobs are and they know where their authority lies. And if there are groups that have an economic interest in that authority, then they would be restricted from gifts from them. All others, they would not be. So that's really kind of the basis of where decision is at. And what we also put in here was it commits the public body to a particular course of action. An example of that would be, let's say, a building inspector. They go out and they inspect a building, and they either pass or fail that inspection. Now there is, they've committed the agency to a course of action, either approving that inspection or disapproving that inspection. If they disapprove the inspection, somebody along the line could come back and overrule them through an appeal process of some sort, but they've committed the agency to a course of action. I used an example as myself earlier as a revenue agent for the Department of Revenue. When I decided to garnish somebody's wages, I committed the agency to a course of action. The Department of Revenue was garnishing those wages, and therefore I would have been restricted from receiving over $50 from anybody that I garnished their wages. Not that I was usually offered
they
that.
Were.
But you can see that you wouldn't want somebody to be offered that, say, before that action happened. Another, you know, there's lots of examples out there of people now. So this is kind of where the line is at this point. The commission meets on Friday. They will review these rules, and they'll either approve them or they will send us back to the drawing board on them. So
questions?
I see a lot of perplexed faces.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No problem.
Maybe I haven't answered the questions well enough.
I have a few, because when the first draft came out, I was a little bit chagrined, both on the definition of what a decision was, because I thought we're broadening that scope again, back to what we had the problems with the first plan, when we had the stories that came out about the young pool boy who couldn't get a wedding ring. It was a little tighter, but it looked like it was broadening that whole thing, and we were going to be back kind of in the same position we were before. This one has tightened it up, and I haven't had a chance to read it over enough yet. But one of the things that surprised me is that there hadn't been a meeting prior to the first draft with the advisory committee. Because I mean, one of the things that I had hoped in all the conversations we had last year was that there would be a process in which we got to, we asked some of those people from the cities and the counties and these special districts and had these group of people there giving you some information about how they saw it so that we could have a draft that didn't raise everybody's level of anxiety up quite so much. That didn't happen? Is that what I was hearing you say?
Chair Robin, that's correct. And I, you know, like I said, I apologize for that. But, you know, in the short time frame that we have to get these rules out, because we really need them to be operative by January 1st, sometimes it doesn't just allow you to have all those prior meetings. By us actually writing the rules, we might have encouraged more people to participate. And actually, I think that the advisory committee did an excellent job. Like I said, I think you have to have a starting point. I know when I first started with the commission and the last set of rules from Senate Bill 10, we basically started off with a clean slate. And that took four committee meetings, four advisory groups just to get a draft that we went from. And, you know, as you can see, you know, the time frame didn't allow it, and in the last biennium, we didn't make the January 1st deadline. So the agency took upon itself to actually go ahead and write these original draft rules that we came out with the advice of our counsel, and then we took that as a starting point. And as you can see from the difference between the original draft and what is going to come before the commission, there's quite a bit of difference. And I actually think that there were some benefits. There's definitely some downfall to that, but there were some benefits. People came in very focused, and they came in, they had our language, and they came in with, I want to say, alternative language. And through those talks with all the groups, you know, because remember, this advisory group is representing quite a few groups out there. I think we were able to come out with some language that everybody understood. But just to point out one thing, the intent of the agency was not to broaden legislative administrative interest. It was to, like I think I testified the last time I was here, was to try to write something that was staying within the person's scope of authority. If we wrote it that it was too broad, that people felt that we'd kind of opened the floodgates, we certainly didn't mean to do that. And I think that was evident to the people on the advisory committee that that wasn't the intent, that we were trying to get to that. But how do we word it so that people can understand that? Because people have to remember about administrative rules, they're really kind of the layman's, you know, statutes. It's trying to help people understand this and for us to be able to use it as a training tool. So, it would have been nice to include them from the very beginning, but I felt like we needed to really have a starting point so that we weren't spending all our time kind of wordsmithing or trying to organize this, but we were actually had something to work from, and so that's what we did.
I'm trying to think back. There was also one of the other things that got me is there seemed to be a couple new rules that were being written in the first draft, and again, I haven't had a chance to look through the whole second draft, that didn't have anything to do with the new legislation. They were actually stuff from the previous legislation. Definitions, I'm trying to think about, well, the one that we had a conversation about, if we're going on a trip, who has the authority to let me know if it's a fact-finding mission or so on? Who do I have to get permission from? We had that long-going conversation. There seemed to be some other things that were being put in to the first draft that really didn't have anything to do with the last statute. Is that...
Well, Chair Roland, the agency is actually required to look at its rules each biennium, and so we actually took this as an opportunity to try to clean up some language in all the rules. In fact, I just gave you the Division 5 rules because I felt the committee was interested in the gift limitations and the definition of decision, but this is actually the packet that will be going to the commission. And some of the stuff is as simple as changing, getting rid of GSPC and putting OGEC in. But the problem with this in your official capacity, it really wasn't defined very well beforehand. In fact, in the prior rules, it required somebody to get authority to get in their official capacity. And when you actually looked in the statutes, I don't think that was required to have that. So we were actually trying to fix some problems that we might have made mistakes on in the first go around. In practice, though, I don't think we gave out any advice that required people to get authority from somebody to be in their official capacity.
Okay.
So we were fixing other problems.
And I wouldn't want, you know, an agency head and a legislature have a different group of authority they have to go through. I mean, and I think in the past, agency heads could make the authorization themselves if they thought it was a fact-finding mission. And yet we were talking about having different people give authority for legislators to go to something that they had deemed to be that kind of thing. So I think you have started to work towards that common understanding. And I guess that's my biggest issue, is that I would hope that as we get these rules, and I'm not certain that they have to be done this week, personally. I mean, I think a little more time, if we have people look at them, have those conversations, think about them, getting the best minds looking at it and getting something that we all can agree on is the more important than getting it out in the quickest manner. Because at the end of the day, what I would hope would happen is that no matter who I talk to at your department, I would get the same answer. And I'm not sure that people felt that was happening in the past. And so they could ask one person and they get one answer, they could ask somebody else and they get a slightly different way, and that is something I know you and I both agree we want to get away from, so that we feel really comfortable in the final analysis that it's doing what everybody has agreed to that it's supposed to be doing, that meaning is clear, and that we can have trainings for people, and in particular our local government officials are not going to feel like they can't make a decision because they're scared to death that something's going to happen to them, which I think we got to a point for a while where people were really looking over the shoulder everywhere, and that was not the intention from my perspective. It was to make sure that everybody understood what the rules were so they could follow them, as opposed to gotcha later kinds of things. So.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Chair Roland. You know, there's lots of reasons why people may get a different answer. I don't know if we may get different information on a similar event from folks. But, you know, we actually try to sit down as an office and talk about any advice that we've given out so that everybody understands what advice the agency has given out. And sometimes most of the time we sit down and talk about what we're going to give out, because usually when you call us or you email us, you don't get an immediate response. You get an email back, and that's usually the principals in our office sitting down and talking about the circumstances. And there may be times that we actually write back to you and try to get more information that we may need. But, you know, we struggle with that, but we continue to try to prove on that because, again, we want everybody to have the best possible advice out there beforehand, too. we're really not here to try to catch anybody doing this incorrectly. Other things that are happening in the rules is we have put out a penalty matrix out there that's required by statute so that people will be able to see kind of how the commission will analyze sanctions against people that have come before the commission and be found in violation. So I think that's a big step for us to kind of get rid of that veil over the top of us of not knowing what exactly is going to happen to you if you do fall outside of the statute. So I'm really looking forward to that too. So,
and I guess my final thing is that for me, one of the things that we do in Oregon, sometimes it drives me crazy, is process. And when we follow processes really well, we get pretty good results at the end where everybody's gone through it. And in this one, I would contend that if people have felt like they haven't had enough time to give input and to work over this, I would encourage you to think about taking a little bit longer, making sure that those last, you know, it settles in people's minds, that they've had a chance to think about it. We also made a change, I think, in the last session with regard to the little handbook thing that you produce, that it really actually, if you follow it, it's pretty good. Have we had the time to really check that out with some of these other the other groups of people who are going to be affected, the cities, the counties, the special districts? Have they had a chance to look that over and have their attorneys look at it and see if there's any things that we can make sure that it's consistent with everything else too? And so we have a document that everybody is kind of feeling good about, that they know how they can explain it to each other.
Chair Roblin, when you talk about process, I mean, the guide for public officials, it's being worked on right now,
right?
Because until the rules are actually promulgated, it's really difficult for us to do that. But we have made an agreement with all the advisory group to have them participate in that process and review that. Now, I'm not opposed to expanding that out to other folks too. I mean, we want to make sure that they understand it, because really, when you talk about the administrative rules helping people understand, the guidebook is that next step of kind of a simpler way for people to try to understand the laws and rules around the ethics. And so we want to make sure that we're being clear and that we're given useful examples in that book. And so, again, it's a step-by-step process. Now, as far as the process goes on the administrative rules, you know, I hope, and many of the members of the advisory group are here, and they're welcome to come up and tell me that I'm wrong, but I hope that they felt like they did have a chance to have input. The last meeting ended a little early, so if they had more to say. And public comment is still open on these rules and will be open through the commission meeting. I mean, people, the commissioners, the commission chair should invite people for any other comments they might have on these rules. So I don't think we're through yet. And so, I mean, as far as people participating in this process, in fact, I know it's not through yet. And like I said, if the commissioners are not comfortable with the rules that are put before them, I'm sure they will send me back to work on them.
Then my only last one then is, as I understand the process and how it happened, because I've talked to a number of people who have been involved at different times, the first rules came out, or the draft rules, without input. Then we had two meetings in between of the advisory committee.
Of the advisory, yes, sir.
Along with you guys doing stuff. And then a final draft came out. And there hasn't really been a meeting with the advisory committees and this final draft just to see if they got the things that they thought were important. So there hasn't been that kind of follow-up. That'll happen basically at the commission meeting on Friday. Is that correct?
That's,
I mean, if they felt like some of it was listened to, others weren't, they haven't gotten a response back of why certain things weren't accepted or not accepted. And so the only way to get that input would be to come to the Friday meeting.
Or they're welcome to contact me.
Okay. That's a good thing, too.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure that we know that the stakeholders in this whole thing, I think, want the same things. They want it to come out with something that everybody can use as a guide to help us do the right things. All the people that I know that are elected came here with all the right reasons for being elected, to make things better. And they don't like things that come at them as a way to get them, as opposed to helping them make the right decisions in the right ways. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for my Republicans, Democrats, Independents, all those people out there, that when they come to public service, they're doing that in the best interest for the right reasons, to help their communities and their governments get better. And ethics things should be helping them set the standards by which they make those decisions. And I hope that we don't lose that by not engaging them at the very beginning so they understand as we build these rules. That's my biggest concern. And I've had a little bit of angst from people over the last month and a half, and that's why we're here today, actually. Okay. And I haven't had a chance to read this last group, but I have heard from a lot of people that there are much... The anxiety has gone down some, but that doesn't mean it's completely there because it just came out. They're going over it as quickly as they can. And the people who have to advise people are the ones that are the most anxious because they've got to figure out what it means as they advise their public bodies. And I just, for me, if this decision isn't made on Friday, that's great. There's also another meeting in January?
Correct, sir, yes.
And so... There is time to make sure that this gets done in a way that everybody feels that they were a part of it and that it kind of... We had a lot of debates last session with this bill, that those inputs that came during that debate get introduced and made part of this thing, so it's real. So we don't have to come back another session where we're trying to fix the next thing that came out of this. That's my real hope, because I agree with you. The rules are what most people... out there in the general public actually look at. It's not the statute. It's the implementation of those statutes, these rules. So, thank you. Any last questions or thoughts? Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I will try to keep in touch, too. It's been a rapid thing for me, and these last ones got out, and I really haven't had a chance to read them very carefully. So,
I will try to do that as well.
Okay. If you have any questions, feel free to go.
I will do that. Thank you. So with that, we have with us, here we are, our director, Steve Trout, to talk to us about election law updates. And don't forget to introduce yourself and all that. So.
I will. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Steve Trout, Director of Elections. And thanks for giving me a few minutes here to give you an update on what we're doing to implement the newest election laws and some things that we're going to bring back to you here in February for a few fixes. And I wanted to talk about a few of those here in the few minutes that I have. Really, we've got Senator Devlin's going to be carrying a bill for us originating in the Senate that will have just technical cleanup issues, five or six issues that we've identified as we've gone forward. One of them is for our in anticipation of online voter registration going into effect in March. Some of the statutes say that registration has to be in by 5 p.m. Some of them say postmark. Some of them say close of business. So we're going to work to change all of those to 11:59 p.m. so that it's uniform whether you're online or wherever, and also doesn't require our county offices and others that would receive forms to stay open after 5 o'clock. You know, little things like that. We've got some fixes on Senate Bill 783 where we've increased the cost of the filings and the statements in the voter's pamphlet, and that's going to push a lot of people over the threshold that they would have to report and file as a committee. And so we want to adjust those numbers so that some people that are only going to file a candidate statement in the voter's pamphlet, and that's the only campaigning that they're going to do, won't have to go forward and create a committee and be able to, won't have to make all those Orastar filings because they're only going to raise, you know, $650 to be able to pay those higher fees. Another one we've identified is for our fax ballot law that's just getting ready to go into effect. We identified that currently, the way it's written, it only covers our service members. It doesn't include spouses or dependents that are with them. And federal law and our online registration system have them all lumped together. And so we want to be able to come forward and try and treat all of those people that are overseas, whether they be military members or spouses or dependents, treat them all the same. And so we've got some language coming forward to be able to do that. So, you know, really just, again, technical cleanup things to try and implement the what we think is the will of the legislature in passing watching these things, little things that, as we start to implement them, realize that needed to be tweaked and a couple little fixes. So, again, Senator Devlin's going to be carrying that for us. And so if there's, you know, any questions as that comes through, happy to assist. And in that light, if any of you are anticipating any election legislation here in the February session, myself, Mr. Pack, are happy to assist in any of the technical assistance that we can provide. The next update I have is our special election for January 26th is moving forward. We've had a few lawsuits, but as of this morning, those have all been resolved. The Supreme Court issued their opinion last week on the ballot titles and the statements. Made a couple tweaks there, and we actually have those statements now in our office, so that we're starting to prepare those to be able to certify those to the counties. The Circuit Court ruled this morning on the legislature's authority to delegate authority to the legislative committee that drafted those, and the court denied the plaintiff's request for a preliminary injunction, so we're free to move forward with everything that we have. So as of right now, there are no pending lawsuits, and we are full steam ahead for the January election. Now, this Thursday, the 19th, is the deadline for arguments to be filed, and so we're preparing and ready to receive those. And then we're right on schedule to be able to meet our deadline to be able to certify everything to the counties on December 1st, and we'll begin voters pamphlet preparations on Friday. Just an update on the online voter registration system. We are well on our way. We've had good meetings with many of the stakeholders. We've had some of the sponsors and staff there, advocates, counties that have all come in and taken a look at what we've developed so far. We've gotten some good feedback there, and so now we're getting close to being able to lock down the language that's going to be there. So far, we've got very good response from everyone involved, and so we're we're excited to continue moving forward there so that we can meet our March 1st deadline. We're building the system with the capability to be able to be expanded and to have more functionality in the future as resources and time allow, but we're going to have a solid system here ready to go March 1st, but at the same time we're building it with the ability to expand it in the future. And then finally, on the new legislation passed to allow the early scanning up to 7 days before the election, counties have been submitting their security plans and all of that to our office. And to date, we have approved 22 counties to be able to begin scanning the ballots 7 days before Election Day. So most of the counties are excited and jumping at the ability to process those early, which should allow us to get some earlier results. So those are the major things that we have going right now. Be happy to answer any questions or any issues that you may have.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve, in your first update, you made a comment about a time stamp, 11:59 p.m., right? How will that impact mail? I didn't understand how that would... Because your mail was...
Well, and we will continue to have a postmark for any registrations filed through the mail. Those sections will stay the same.
All right, okay.
But, right now it says that you can't make any party changes after 5 o'clock. And so we were going to have to build a system to stop certain things at 5 o'clock and continue on. So we want to make it as consistent as we can. So we'll have one track just for the for anything coming through the mail, and then another track for those that are online.
I thought you were changing, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, you're still going to have mail. So it's in addition to.
It is in addition to, yes.
Other questions? I have just a couple. One, on the security plans to allow people to start correcting early, you're feeling comfortable that you can tell if the machines are used or any of those kinds of things and something can't get changed so they can actually count them, and we know that those numbers are going to be secure.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's one of the things that we actually requested the counties to add additionally because it was a new requirement. So most of them are coming back with putting tamper-resistant seals over the printer ports to make sure that no results can be released early. They have processes in place, limited access to the machines to be able to track anyone that's there. Many of the counties are in the process, along with their courthouses, adding video surveillance to be able to oversee those. And that's something that we're looking at potentially requiring going forward next year. We're trying to evaluate what counties have it right now and whether we're able to achieve that. But yes, I have confidence that the security measures are there to protect and to guarantee the security of any ballots that are run through those machines during those 7 days ahead of time.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I'm happy we gave you an opportunity early to see how the whole system works with respect to an election.
Yes. Thank you very much.
So, our last portion was to discuss possible committee bills, and we had a group of them that we talked about last time. I don't think anything's changed there. I am meeting with the speaker going forward and expect that after those meetings we'll decide some of the bills that I had indicated that we might be working on. I think one of the ones was some fixes for 519, which is the bill on meetings and meeting places. It was a union. You couldn't have mandatory meetings if they talked about certain kinds of things. That one may go to a different committee. It might not be in ours, which is probably, I think it started in business and labor last time. So we're still having conversations about what those might be. I continue to have conversations with people and a group that's been meeting on campaign finance reform. If there's anything like that, we'll let people know as we get going if we're going to have something that comes forward. If you have bills, again, and I think Representative Berger had one that we submitted to the speaker as well. I don't know where, and I haven't had a chance to check with her. But if you have things in between now and then that you really want to think is important, something that's come up that's really important, please get a hold of me. I will touch base with the speaker about introduction of those. And then once we finally have that list, our January meeting, we will actually have those to look at, put forward ahead of time so everybody will know what they are. If we get permission early, I'll try to get a little memo out to everybody to let you know which ones we are doing so people have advance notice, because I don't think there's any reason not to get people to know where we're moving forward on those. There aren't really any secrets on those. Is there anything else? Because I think we're going to get done early, which is always a pleasant thing. So, seeing nothing else, I want to thank our staff who came and presented today, because I think that was really important from my perspective to us to all start recognizing how quickly this is, especially the redistricting, is going to happen to us in a very short period of time. Representative, yes.
Only in that final area, comments. 10 years ago when we did this, it was called Rules and Redistricting Committee.
Oh, okay.
It was a combined title. And we did hit the road quite a bit. So,
did you feel that was an important part of it, the road stuff?
Very important.
Okay, that's important, because some people have asked that of me, and I know you were on that committee.
Yeah.
And you may be one of the few from that era that was on that committee.
Another dinosaur.
No, institutional knowledge.
Yes, that's what it is.
Okay, with that then, I will adjourn our Rules Committee and thank everybody for being here on time and ready to go. So I really appreciate that. So thank you.